you don't have to spend that many months or years or lifetimes on a cushion to arrive at some very poignant and relatively available observations. Typically, an early stage meditator goes into a certain kind of shock because they are seeing kind of clearly for the first time that their mind is insane. And if there's the slightest bit of interest in quieting the mind, that ship done sailed.
You fast find out how utterly useless it is.
And for the longest time, this sincere meditator is concerned about the content that's appearing in mind and might want it to abate somehow. And in all of that introspection, the more radical observation is not made. And curiously, not even taught or encouraged in the literature, in the educational, in the meditation education process. The content matters so little. The more, for me, fun, startling observation is that mind is arising absolutely of its own accord. What's in it? Come on. I mean, it will pack anything that it can into itself, like a coal furnace will just consume any fuel that you put in there. I mean, even your frozen compost that, it'll just consume everything. So that this is occurring absolutely of its own accord, bioprofusely, right? Piezoelectrically. That there is a broiling, effervescent consciousness in the first place is like, oh my God. But for days, months, years, if not decades or lifetimes, the meditator doesn't ever have that strange, affectionate encounter with how remarkable this is.
It's like a battling mind.
Yes.
And I remember that myself, as an early meditator, thinking, oh, this doesn't seem crazy to do. I keep thinking, everybody you talk to that's new are like, they seem to think so often that, like I did, that I'm a special case. Now, I would meditate more, but it's so frustrating because my mind keeps clicking on, And it's like, join the crowd, man. That's part of the deal, But there's still this impetus to, succeed and...
Well, whatever willpower may be present that has... placed its confidence in an outcome, in an agenda, in a milestone of some kind of progress, spiritual or otherwise. That's, you could say, the attendant myth of becoming that effervesces in connection with the miracle of consciousness appearing at all. But the meditator fragments the inclusivity of this startling observation by placing him or herself in the mix as a willful entity. Mm-hmm. So once you take this unbelievable fuck all as an individuated willful entity, then you're in an adversarial relationship with consciousness itself, because you presume yourself to be, right, sufficiently correctly individuated, and now you're at odds with the content. And that's how samsara has you.
It does just the opposite of...
Yes, meaning?
It affirms that you're a self that's failing miserably.
Yes. Or any symptom.
Or succeeding beautifully. Quiet mind today, oh, I'm so good.
That's as good or worse.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Any and all symptoms. And it depends on your personality. I mean, you know, the symptoms that might afflict Jamie are not necessarily the symptoms that, you know, would afflict Francine or myself or you. You know, your Achilles symptom tendon is kind of unique. Right? Because you don't manipulate in the world the same way someone else in your life does. Everyone manipulates in the world, manages the artifacts and iconization of what they think is self in the world in their own unique manner. That's why the world turns. That's why we have all of these, you know, strange, bizarre, maddeningly attractive personalities. Egomaniacs all. Yeah.
Yeah. Each one is this totality.
Now, I've been, and perhaps all of you have, as well as whoever might be listening to this gibberish, have been or participated or attended many kinds of contemplative educational, right, programs, institutions, books and teachers and tapes and the whole lot of it. You can sit a 3-month Vipassana course, sit, walk, sit, walk, take food, shut the fuck up, sit, walk, take food, work period, have a 20-minute conversation with the teacher so that they know that you're not about to go psychotic and they have to bring in the, you know, the lithium injections. 3 months you could sit there and they can give you Vipassana instruction up the yin-yang, and not a one of those fuckers, or let's say few and far between, will bring this point out over a 3-month intensive introspection journey into, call it reality or, right, contemplative Vipassana practice. They might say, oh, the Buddha said, you know, nothing is either I or mine. I'm like, great, monkey see, monkey do. Right? They might say, as they take you through the dismantling process of the Vipassana, you know, practice, feelings and emotions and thought and, right, you know, it's a dismantling, right? It's a dismantling journey and an adroit, well-conceived dismantling journey. But again, what happens is that the consciousness gets befuddled by content. You see? Once again, you're back in the myth of, oh, I have to attend to the content. Bodily sensations, mind, emotion, da-da-da-da-da. So you're attending to content, and the goal of the Vipassana deconstruction is not self, right? Every time whatever is arising is clearly not self. So in a roundabout way, but the emphasis is all wrong.
But you're saying the emphasis is on not self, though?
But again, that emphasis on not self is mechanical. It's circumloquacious. It doesn't emphasize leaving the myth of inclusivity completely behind. So it simply encourages and therefore shoots itself in the foot unnecessary engagement with content to attempt to dismantle the content or see that the content is not self. Already there's a strong verbal vector of what you're supposed to be experiencing and get from the goddamn practice that you've committed 3 months of your life to do. And you fail. And this repeats at all of these institutions.
Yeah, and pretty soon you have a real thing about it. You have a whole...
Now you're in a cult.
...mind strategy.
Yes.
And it's pretty hard to get out of it, how you think.
Well, it's impossible unless something shows up in your karmic destiny, right? That gives you a good foosball whack in the butt, sends you completely off the table. As long as you're on the table and spinning, you know, foosball men and women to kick the ball into the net, you're on the table.
Yeah.
Vipassana will not expel you from the game the way that it is typically taught. Same with Zen. Even the Tibetan Dzogchen masters, though they may be more subtle, crafty with language and concept, end up emphasizing the same problem. Because Rigpa, Dharmakaya, Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya all become fetishized. How quickly? No gap. The speed at which your one's, my mind, can fetishize an effervescent conceptual field arising spontaneously takes exactly how long? No time. No time. So the immediacy of the myth of fetishizing inclusivity is just as powerful in assisting you with nirvanic insight as it is at deluding you with samsaric presumption. It's the same speed, which is instantaneous. So delusion, which is just an interpretive field, an interpretive morphic possibility. It's not real. But delusion occurs at what speed? How about instant fucking taneous? Which means there's no you that could possibly hang out behind or around it. Delusion is consuming how quickly? Instantaneously. Just look at mind. It's doing itself. The associations are doing themselves. Universe creation is doing itself. Like and dislike and preference and artifact manipulation is all doing itself. What we call mind, thinking my mind, I think, I choose, is merely the metabolic waste of a bacterial process. If you saw your mind as just flatulence, you might not pay so much attention to what and who you think you are. I mean, certainly you don't give your actual flatulence a lot of attention. You know, you might be polite and, you know, lean a little bit or leave the room or whatever. If you're alone in the room, you don't even lean. You don't even leave the room. You just fart it out. You don't give it a second thought. But look how much attention you give to your mind. A lot. If someone said, look, your mind is just the same as what the gas that's passing out of your sphincter, you would, oh. I had no idea. I thought the shit showing up in my mind, which is the consequence of metabolic waste, was me. No, it's not. No, it's just metabolic effluent. It's the flotsam and jetsam. I mean, look at the vibrational nature of mind and thought. Look at the vibrational nature of mind and thought. Why does it have a certain kind of vibrational signature, a certain rhythm, right? A certain urgency. Isn't that just of its own nature? I mean, look at the rhythm of the sun or the rhythm of the earth or the rhythm of the moon or the rhythm of the tides or the rhythm of the seasons or the rhythm of everything or the rhythm of the ocean currents or the rhythm of the air flows or the rhythm of one or a million galaxy clusters. Who, what, who did this? Who has the blueprint? God. Okay. God has the blueprint. That worked. That nailed it. Where does God live? Well, in everybody's house. He dwells in everyone's heart. She dwells wherever, you know. Okay, that nailed it. So we think that this profundity of associative effluent is mine, and that I'm in charge of the rhythm and the pace and the timbre and the content and the directional decisions that I make, because this belongs to me, because I'm thinking. No, pardon me for yelling, not the case. It's just not the case. Now, why isn't that taught at the goddamn Vipassana retreat in the first 10 minutes? Why waste time with all of this absurd pedagogical fanfare when you could just say, look, 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 your fucking mind is not yours. It's merely gaseous excrement. Give it no attention. Instead of sitting there and trying to run through a 3-month course of deconstruction of what exactly? Nothing ever happened to you worth deconstructing. Your identity is not something that occurred at conception or birth or some other, you know, cardinal point in your so-called temporal existence. No. If there's identity, it's now. Because nothing other than now is real. So you can't be the consequence of anything that you thought prior to this moment. If you're hallucinating, which is samsaric delusion, and you're welcome to it, I mean, it's a blast, you're doing it now. So the speed at which samsara will suck you into a morass of self is faster than fast, and that same powerful, call it powerful or whatever, speed or inclusivity, the non-dual startlement of inclusivity, will also release you into absolute nirvana. When? Now's good. So you're that free, in a manner of speaking, if not absolutely so, you are that free, and not to choose, because choose is the foosball. If you're choosing, you're in the foosball game. Don't choose. There's no gap. There's no individual that could choose. So don't choose. Here, this is your nirvanic release. And if you think otherwise, fuck you, have a nice day. It's that simple. I mean, it's really that weird. It's that evangelical. This is your nirvanic release. If you've got some other idea about it, fuck you and have a nice day. How's that a way to start a Vipassana retreat? Now, well, we're going to be here for 3 months. You better settle in. Watch the parking lot empty. Holy shit, let's get out of here.
It's a mad run.
I came here to be a Buddhist, not to wake up. Oh, I'm sorry. You came here to be a Buddhist. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, that's that room. Yeah. Yeah, I came here to practice Vipassana. I'm so sorry. This small group of miscreant misfits from hell are actually interested in waking up. If you're here to be a Buddhist, stay or go as you please. If you're here to be a Hindu, if you're here to practice Bikram, this is not for you. Everybody apologizes because they want your money and they want your loyalty and they want your devotion and they want you to be a salesperson. LifeSpring wants you to go out and sell. Landmark wants you to go out and sell. Craig Hamilton, all the, you know, televangelist non-dual gurus want you to go out and sell for them. They want to pimp you out. And if you're interested in being pimped out, I think the Night Sky Sangha is the place for you. You see how crazy it is? I mean, I'm insane. That's given. But really, it's important to see how crazy you are, how wild that you are, that you have the capacity, call it God-given. We blame him and her for everything else. Why not this? God-given that this moment never happened before. And you don't actually have a frame of reference for it occurring right now. You don't. You think you do. That's the foosball table. You don't actually have a frame of reference for this occurring as miraculously, fractally, nuanced, subtly, and multivalently as it is this present moment. So if you want to have a relationship with the fierce wildness of yourself from the comfort zone of a samsaric point of view, fuck you, have a nice day. That's fantastic. I don't love you any less. I never loved you to begin with, so how could I love you any less? No, I love everyone. I do. Even my friend Kaylee, I love her a lot. It's all about the love. It's all about the love. It's all about the love. Once you see that the mirage of your Eeyore approach to living, once you see that it's a myth, that you're being cajoled by forces unimaginable into the presumption of samsaric identification, then maybe it's not a choice, right? Something magical happens, which is not of time, not of space, not of choice, not of identification, which simply reveals to you the miracle of yourself. That's your nirvanic opportunity. Tell me, what moment in your life since conception, if we want to go back that far, have you failed to have a nirvanic opportunity? What, not until now? You've never been without the ongoingly generous, gracious, and oh so well obscured nirvanic opportunity. But we think, no, I'm just a seeker, fucker, poser from hell. And I want the content of my mind to be more compliant.
Well, the idea or the lack thereof hadn't struck until a certain time.
Yes, that's right.
And then even when it does, you're immediately pulled in all other directions.
Well, of course, not only in your worldly life, but lamentably so in your spiritual life.
Sure.
Because all of the spiritual instruction is still on the foosball. On the table.
It's walking a razor's edge is what it seems.
Okay. But there's so no time in it.
Yeah.
And there's so no entity that you can personify it, and it loves for you to personify it because you're talking about it. Enough about you, what about me? It's saying all the time. Enough about you, what about me? Enough about you, what about me? Enough about you, what about me? That's what samsara does. It's just a glutton for attention. Enough about you, what about me? And you're all walking the razor's edge, and it goes, gotcha. You see? Whatever shows up in your bizarritude as an explanation, as a destination, as a metaphor, as a poignancy, as a place to rest, it's got you. And that's what we typically want. You see, we want to be ourselves at rest. It's not happening.
Option.
Huh?
It's not an option.
No, it turns out not to be an option. Boy, that would really kill sales. Everyone would just flood out of the meditation hall. You mean it's not an option for me to accomplish being myself at rest? Sorry, no. Did you not read the fine print? Right? Hi there. It's not an option. That could be really upsetting.
All right. Three pretzels.
You know the rules. If you come late, you bring a treat.
That's right.
You're good. Just, you're a treat. You're a visual treat. You're eye candy, baby.
She likes ball ones.
I see myself.
That's it. Irresistible.
Come on.
Simply irresistible. What were we talking about? I got distracted by the pretzels.
Being in love with yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, being in love with yourself. You know all about that, right? That's what you sell.
Isn't it on special this week?
Is it on special
this
week?
Yeah, it's funny because that whole build your self-esteem thing, it's like people with better self-esteem don't actually, you know, do better in life. They're more likely to be in like people who are like, have low self-esteem do better in life.
You gotta do something about it. Yeah. It's motivation.
Yeah, it's motivation. So it has nothing to do with how necessarily.
Oh. Wow.
So they'll come in and say, I wanna have better self-esteem.
And you say, no, don't.
I'll say, you don't have to worry about that.
You're not gonna accomplish anything in life if you get it.
No.
Is that what you say?
That'll be your ruination.
Give it up. You're not good enough to get any self-esteem.
What we end up, I can use the word learning, is a strange geometry as you consider, or can we say relate to, the irrefutability of the piezoelectricity of the radiant nature of your present consciousness. And using that vocabulary, of course, is deliberate, because you're actually paying attention to the startle factor that this is so. Not the content. I mean, our egomaniacal habit is because we are suffering the content and all the lamentation that accompanies that, the apprehension, the anxiety, the egomaniacalness, the hubris, right? We're suffering the content. So if in your yogic journey, your contemplative journey, some crazy person says, don't sweat the content. See that you can discover a quality of intelligence that is so bananas that it can feel itself absolutely unencumbered. That's the blam, blam, bang, bada boop. So you are invited, not by me, because there's no way that I could have gotten you here. If you're here, you're invited by fuck if I know. To enter into a congenial and egalitarian dreaming cooperative where you take time out of your busy fucked up life to feel yourself
and have some breaths.
This is like an incinerator or an insyncerator, whatever it is.
Oh. It's an in synchronous incinerator. Let's make the Rurik triangle.
It was funny to hear you say that about your language. Half the time I'm like, I don't know what he's saying, but I'm just kind of hanging out here. And
that makes two of us.
We're doing okay.
Yeah. They just call them on a lot of,
that's your intent.
A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff from the olden days.
Wow. Kind of a nice pretzel. Mm. With sesame seeds and salt.
Gluten-free, huh?
Yeah.
Nice job.
Boy, I would dip this in some mustard or some pesto and crack open a beer.
I'm surprised.
Mm.
Of course.
I think it's rude to eat on camera. Thank God no one's watching.
Yeah. Somebody out there saying, I'm here.
SOS. I'm drowning. I'm here.
You're here.
No.
That's kind of how you feel on the other end when you're like, it's funny. You're like, hello. And like, no one answers. You're like, Hi.
I guess I can do anything I want.
Really?
He's open.
The impulse to opine, justify, have a starting point, a middle, an end, spontaneously arises. It is not important. You don't have to go to battle with it or insist that it not do what it does. Good luck convincing samsara not to be itself. Yeah, good luck. You can climb,
wrestle that one down.
You can climb Kanchenjunga, Tibetan land of the thunderbolt. You can scream right into the face of whomever, whatever deity you happen to be fond of or pissed off with at the moment. Stop this samsara! You can rage against them at the highest, you know, one of the highest points on the world. Just stop the samsara! Oh, just another bunch of fuckers on a crest. When we tangle with content, when we tangle with becoming, when we tangle with space-time and invest ourselves in an outcome that's different than this one, you're basically, stop the samsara. No one's listening.
Pray.
Right. Yeah. Like, give that person something to distract themselves with. So they'll shut up and go away.
Sorry. How do I make it go?
Answer it. Who is it?
Put them on speaker.
Put them on speaker.
How do I make it go?
I just turned it on.
Turn the power.
Oh, just put it on speaker and leave it on the floor. They'll never call you again.
This is Bill. This is the guy that I talk to sometimes about this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
I almost should have put it on speaker. But
call him back. Put it on speaker.
Bring him in.
Text him the YouTube. Text him.
Problem, eh?
Text him the YouTube address. He can put his headphones on.
He was pretty high earlier. He should be able to hear it.
His computer. Yeah, feel litter.
Oh well. Ah, fuck him.
That's the way it's gonna be. Let's make sure that he actually did.
He actually doesn't have any ears.
Badges. Don't need no stinking badges.
Somebody mentioned on Tuesday, like, something about you could, you know, sit in on this telephone call naked if you wanted to. And I'm sitting in the bathtub, like, with my earpiece on, listening. I'm like,
that's me.
There's, like, no formalities. You can just show up however you want. I love it.
No.
Yeah, it takes people by surprise.
To make
that. Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's from
like
anywhere.
In the beginning, well, what did you talk about? It's like, I'm like, the same thing we always talk about. It reminds me of that cartoon. I think I've said it before. Pinky and the Brain. Same thing we always talk about. I'll just take over the world.
Pinky should be our mascot.
Oh, yeah. We'd end up being his mascot.
Mm. Yep. This is an intimate encounter, not with me, but you with you. You are, to be stranger about it, you are an effervescent intimate encounter, nonstop. And we think that's what we want. Oh, is that what enlightenment sounds like or some such bullshit? We think that's something we might want. But if it actually starts to show up, if your radiance, your poignance, your irrefutability comes knocking on your door, who knows how friendly you might be with it? And the yogas, all of them, I like to speak in ridiculous generalities about everything that I don't know anything about, are designed to withstand the shock of your own intimacy.
So that's the usefulness of a yoga.
That's right. The utility of the preparatory processes are not leverage for intimacy to occur. Intimacy is always present. Right? Looking to enlightenment as an event suggests that whatever this is not presently what it is, but it'll be what it is later. You're like, now, dumb fuck. That can't be the case. If this is capable of being enlightened later, what's the problem right now?
Yeah.
So this is already what it is. It's not like reality figured out that you were interested and then decided to change itself to suit your curiosity. I don't think so. So this is already what it is. And all of the preparatory stuff that we might do, which includes chocolate-covered almonds and gluten-free pretzels.
Wonderful pretzels.
I know.
Yeah, we passed them around.
Oh, that was quick.
Yeah.
Those prepare you, unbeknownst to you, for an invitation, an encounter with absolute intimacy.
I guess that must happen often. People get a reaction or something like that. It's like, whoa. You know.
I would argue that even people that shop at Redner's have this experience probably several times a day. Which is even strange because that's all this is. It's never not absolute intimacy inviting you into a evaporative, blissful relationship with itself. There's never not that. What we call our mind, our construct, our universe creation, and the distractibility, the intensity, the magnetism of the distractibility makes us think that in the midst of an ongoing and unabated wonder field, I'm deciding to do things. I'm living my life. And why does that occur? Because we become somehow habituated to the movement or presence of mind as the dictator of reality. We fail to see that we are actually floating about in a timeless, space-less, elaborate ruse of pure nirvana. We fail to see it. And we do so by not paying attention.
Or we pay attention to the particulars. Yes, it's what.
Yes, we're distracted by content, and we fail to see the original radiant nature of the demand placed upon you, which is intimacy itself. And then we have the gall, the unmitigated gall, to say, "Ooh, I want to be enlightened." What is this now?
Chopped liver.
It's a pretzel without mustard, a pretzel without pesto, it's a pretzel without a can of beer.
It's funny, I had like Chinese mustard in the car and I was like, really kind of agitated.
So I was like sucking the hot mustardy before.
Can we rename the sangha, please? Sucking Hot Mustard Sangha. Because that rocks.
Yeah. It made me feel better. It was like
spicy. Oh. Like self-torture.
Better than cutting, right? I know you.
To people with what, eat spicy food.
You're right.
It'll serve its purpose.
It does. You want, I mean, the cutting and interventions like that, yeah. It's the shock value yeah. and the chemistry shift.
You get a little endorphin rush.
Yeah, that's right.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not
sucking hot mustard sangha.
Yeah.
We should bring some packets and we'll try that out. Yeah. I mean, did you just like nibble at it or really like...
It's a
bad day.
In order to get the endorphin rush, you have to suck it straight to the brain.
You know about this, don't you?
I'm trying to just pull it off.
No, I'm just listening to what she's saying. I don't think I can handle that.
And then I picked up another one.
Oh, jeez.
You were cutting.
Was it
I
two it. Mustard day?
Yeah.
That's good. I feel better now.
Yeah.
Ask for homemade mustard next time you're Chinese.
Oh, homemade.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
That's better. Homemade.
Yeah. Right. Your cranium actually shifts. Your sutures just start to split apart.
My fluids, you know, my histamine.
I have baby head again. My fontanelle is open. See, that's what we could do. Suck hot mustard, homemade hot mustard, and then your thing will open, and then your crest will be soft to the universe, and you'll have a kundalini experience.
An interesting event for a while. Maybe that'll
be there. You go.
In Kensington,
let's smoke pot
it.
And then suck down hot mustard.
They're drying it and snorting it in Kensington.
Nice.
It's like the latest.
Nice.
Hot mustard?
Yeah.
Down in Kensington, yeah.
Like a lot of relatives down there. Maybe I can get some. They live in some pretty, you know, they probably know where to
yeah.
I know. Yeah.
We're going to start doing
before and after pictures of mustard suckers, like crystal meth addicts. Oh, there's a mustard sucker. You can tell them.
It takes out your tonsils.
They have turmeric stains all over.
This is spiritual, right? I mean, I need a little feedback. This is
highly spiritual.
Highly, right? I was starting to sweat there a minute. I thought maybe the mustard thing was like less than spiritual.
It's shamanic. Let's just
yeah, nice. Good. Whew, I'm good. I don't want to deliver a, you know, substandard product.
Did I miss a debriefing of the event that you went?
Wasn't that exciting?
She's still sucking on hot mustard packets.
Obviously didn't work that well. If upon returning to the continental United States, she's sucking on hot mustard.
Double mustard.
Double mustard, yeah.
She's there like a belt tied around her neck.
Yeah. Autoerotica asphyxiation, hot mustard. We're going to take this to all the way. Right. Best hot mustard O that I've ever had.
I'm sure to video YouTube that one.
Spate of unintended suicides in Upper Bucks County. Mustard packets all over the restroom floor. Purple people hanging by a belt from their shower rods. Big smiles on their faces. The dawn of the mustard suckers.
I don't know what to do. They're like, can we make mustard illegal?
People think that guy from NXS died from autoerotic. Mm-hmm. It's like auto hot mustard asphyxia.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Little yellow trail right down from the nostril. Yeah.
But they were so embarrassed that they said...
Yeah, no, it's cooler to die from erotic asphyxiation than hot mustard asphyxiation. It's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. They did legalize marijuana in District of Columbia, I think, too.
Yeah, well, it happens to be legal in this room, too.
Careful. we'll have the cops showing up at our door.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long time for PA. I mean, we don't even have a medical marijuana allowed here.
Yeah. Well, I heard Pennsylvania had the most doctors who thought that there should be medical marijuana. 90% of the doctors.
Why do you think they call it the city of brotherly love?
Maybe we'll change things.
Something weird and perhaps radical starts to peek through the din of your familiar consciousness. It has its own signature. It's recognizable. It solicits you. And one shifts from being a content junkie, which is the movement, the apparatus, the movement of psychological time, to whatever your present intimacy actually is, that comes into recognition. Now, it's not the mind that's doing the recognizing. So we tend to be on the lookout for a state change through, right, the facility or focal capacity of thinking. Right? We're scanning ourselves for a hint of something novel. And even in that process, we can be too grossly oriented. What's another word for grossly oriented? Thick, heavy-handed. Yeah. So there's a lightness to your engagement with the profundity of your own nirvanic intimacy. There's a certain lightness. Because feeling yourself without the reflex of a thought pattern or a conclusion is an art, right? It for sure occurs organically, so even if you're bad at it, you're still fucked. It's still going to take you out. But you can start to, you could say, play cooperatively with it. And you're like, oh, right, yeah, the lightness of, right? What is that movie? The lightness of being, the unbearable lightness of being, which is just a lovely poem for awake.
I think of it like as suspension. And the thing is, I have a hard time putting nouns after the suspension of. It's just a suspension. But then I notice that, you know, something will come along and the thought will just, you know.
Yes.
Will just grab me.
Sure.
It's a totally different vibe. I mean, it's a vibe. You know, it's
yes.
a thing. And it's like.
Right.
It's like the temptress.
That's why Ulysses tied himself to the mast. Right, so he could endure the unbearable lightness of being from the siren's song, and go mad with it, but not compromise the vessel. Yeah. So maybe it takes a bit of a wild nature to be willing to go mad with yourself, even perhaps at the risk of compromising the vessel. Yeah. You're willing to go into this adventure that no one believes in. No one in your family, none of your friends even suspects that this adventure is real.
Or they think that it's just plain dangerous.
Or dangerous.
Or they don't know doodly about it because you can't even tell them that.
It's not even on their radar as something to articulate at all.
Just don't talk about it. What the hell would you say? They wouldn't get it. It just doesn't land in most places. It does not translate.
That's right. You could even have this conversation with 150 people that have just come off a 7-day Vipassana retreat, and maybe two or three might go, huh? That's how strange this is. Even in the belly of the beast, where these contemplative institutions thrive, confusion reigns supreme. That's cool. Why not? So this unbearable lightness of being, the ground upon which all your bird calls occur, is palpable, has signature and texture, has a vocabulary. It's very playful. It doesn't have a source and it doesn't have a consequence. So its entire expressive nature is apparitional. That's why it's so happy. That's why the intimacy of you is as happy as it is. Because you are not source. You are not consequence. You're the miracle of a playful, radiant nature that can and does conjure anything it, you, feel like conjuring. And this way that it plays is not confined to your birth and your death. So it's curious that we kind of un- or subconsciously frame the bullshit of our lives between the bookends of the imagination of birth and the imagination of death.
Well, that's our experience in terms of our mind, right? I mean, we can't go beyond that. Or at least we don't.
You always are beyond it.
Yeah. But as far as content goes, that's it.
That's what appears to be so, right? So samsara has all these tricks up its sleeve, right? Smoke and mirrors. It makes it appear as if your present experience began some number of whatever after you were conceived, before which you were what exactly?
Twinkle in my dad's eye.
Yeah, really. Right, right. Before your conception and before your birth, this was not so. This was not what it is. In other words, reality, palpable reality, came on the scene as the result of a copulation event. God, I hope my parents were mustard sucking at the time. Yeah. So the myth of you that appears, right, flawlessly from moment to moment, doesn't really know what it is, thankfully. That's the glory of it all. You don't really know what you are or how you came about. It's a trivial inconvenience to suggest that this is so by virtue of that your body was conceived through a copulation event and now, you know, you wear your mustache a certain way. And that's part of the, you know, a symptom of the intimacy creeping up on you. Is that you're like, wait a second. Oh, whoa. Wait, what? Right? And then you're catapulted into, right? You could say realms upon realms upon realms, which is no realm at all. Because it's just the playful nature of intimacy, which has no source and has no consequence and has no building blocks. And yet look what it can do. Yeah. I mean, do you want to be free as a person? Do you want to be free as a body? Do you want to be free as a spirit?
Free as a bird.
You want to be free as a bird or a mastodon. Yeah, or a 10,000-year-old woolly rhino just pulled out of the permafrost in Siberia. Yeah. And when you start to feel this and you start to lose confidence in that you are frameable at all. And you're like, a minute ago, I was really, really interested in being an enlightened person. Oops. Or 5 minutes ago, I was really interested in being an enlightened body. Oops. And this intimacy does not remedy the myth of your life, then thank goodness for that. You can still get run over by a car while you're having a reverie outside the Dunkin' Donuts.
Just an observation. But it occurs to me that I'm always trying to build a path.
Okay. Yes.
And the path is to take these extraneous things that are in my way to keep me from real peace.
Yes.
And
right.
Get them done with. Done.
Yes.
And this pristine path.
That's right. Yeah, you're on the foosball table.
There's no sense in going there, but I mean, yeah.
So this wonderful effervescent nature is the art of becoming. This is the samsaric art of becoming. And the samsaric art of becoming will convince you that there are things in your way that you must resolve or discard or heal around or forgive.
I keep hitting on, you know, so it's like it's proof. Sort of, you know, or evidence, or it's
yes.
Reification.
That's exactly. You could say reification is the mythic presentation of justification that you are something, and therefore there's something in your way, and you must clear the path, and you will do so thanks to one or several pundits that are going to give you the keys to the kingdom. Yes? And the anthropomorphization is exactly the samsaric, right? Delusion. Yeah. Which is not really even a delusion. To suggest that samsara is delusional is not really true, is it? Samsara is the shit. Samsara is nirvana. Nirvana is samsara. Because there's no entity that could possibly be the recipient of samsara as a successful delusional, right? Circle K brand, Circle S, you know? Hey, what cattle herd are you part of? Well, I'm from the Circle S. I've got right here in my flanks. It says Circle S. I belong to the Samsara Ranch. You see? It doesn't actually... Success, samsara can't actually imprint upon you or delude you.
So there's no sense in calling it an illusion.
Not really.
Or anything else.
No.
I mean, I've always had a bit of a problem with the, you know, proclaiming that. It's like, why bother to proclaim?
Yes. Right. If you're selling nirvana.
You know. You have it all down.
If you're selling nirvana, you want to create the apparitional confidence in a common enemy. Right? That's how nation states and ideologies survive and thrive and create genocides. Yeah, they enroll. You know, you can read very clearly the engineers of, you know, Spanish or Italian or German or whatever fascism, right? I mean, the book, the manual is very clear, right? Make sure everyone's telling on everyone else and they all have a common enemy. And that, you know, we, the government, you know, me, the illustrious leader like Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un, right, is the safe haven, the repository of your miserable, sinful suffering, and will protect you from the others. And that's what's happening in, right,
yeah,
in your own mind, in your own curious identification pattern. And so it appears as if there are obstacles in your way, or that delusion has actually occurred and stuck. But it can't. Because we think of delusion as an event or an object that's stuck to a subject before this moment. And so I have a handful of artifacts clearly in my way that need to be resolved, eradicated, talked out of it, whatever your, you know, idea of symptomatic relief is. But that's not the case. The case is, not that there's a case, is that right here, right now. If you don't insist or proclaim that you're under the influence of samsara, are you under the influence of samsara?
Seemingly so.
But only seemingly in that micro curious instant when you assign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
But it's constant assigning.
But it's also constant emptiness.
Yeah.
It is as much constantly as will poetic license to the word constantly, right? It's as much constantly doing no assigning as it is doing profound, miserable assigning. It's not doing any assigning. So your nature...
So you let the assigning go on. Who cares? Assign away, right? I mean, really. I mean, you can't really stop assigning. But underneath it all, what's assigning? You know?
Okay. Stranger.
You know?
Yes, stranger than that. Because let's say I mean, it's a lovely insight, right? Let the assigning, right? Release the Kraken. Release the assigning. In other words,
you can't restrain it.
What can you do about anything?
Notice.
Not even that. No, you see, because even the most subtle anthropomorphization of you as an apparent agent that can give permission for reality to already be what it is, or refuse reality what it already is just evaporatively, delusionally not occurring.
Is there, how do I put it, a problem with noticing?
Yeah, definitely. If you're invested in it
automatically
as a strategic advantage, then there's a problem. Definitely, because now you're on the lookout for some kind of hyperbaric, right, incoming from consciousness or the material of consciousness to say, yeah, baby, noticing fucking rocks. But it's just myth. It's more myth. So there's noticing, and then there's noticing, and there's noticing, and there's noticing
right.
until...
That's what I'm thinking. Noticing is like this word that is like...
Yeah, once you coin a phrase, once Wayne Lickerman says FSA, enlightenment's done. It's off the table. Not going to happen. Because you fetishize quicker than instantly whatever it appears is appearing, and then assign it to self as an accusation.
But isn't there, can you say that there's noticing without assignment? I mean, isn't that really the bottom line, in a sense, if you want
to? Yeah, but you see, again, you can see how, you know, Jamie, the absolutely sincere, never going to quit, absolutely committed to the end seeker, is going
to
get to the bottom line. Guess what? There's no bottom line, other than that this is so. You cannot assign a strategy to what never occurred in the first place. This is so, but it's not occurring. It's irrefutable, but it's not even happening. And the moment you assign by creating agency, process, conclusion, finality.
But
yes.
Noticing.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of other stuff. I mean, it doesn't have to. It's just noticing.
It's just noticing. Just on, let me have my noticing.
Come on. Like a big deal.
Come on, give me something here. I pay good
just
money.
Let me have it.
Come on, I donate to the church. Give me something. Help me out here. Buddy, can you spare a time?
It's the same thing that we got to that a couple of years ago, probably with witness. I remember the same thing.
Yeah.
Pick your word.
I get it, right? We get it. Sure. If noticing is going to be the vessel and the pestle and the palace from the chalice. Is it the vessel and the pestle or the palace and the chalice?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you can turn anything into, you know, a poetic nonsense, like noticing. Even though, of course, the intention of our, you know, dear Mr. Brown, whom I love, right, uses everything at his disposal, which is pretty much a magic wand, to, right, pepper the crowd with whatever is necessary to attract engagement, to attract attention, to attract affection, to create a bridge for the startlement that you are so. So why not use a mnemonic or behavioral device as curious as noticing to, let's say, emphasize, right, that this is a textural irrefutability. Okay, yeah, cool. And you can see that no matter what vocabulary you use, whether we understand the words, don't understand the words, think we got it, for sure, don't have it, everything is fetishized instantaneously. Because this consciousness is fetishizing instantaneously. Everything else is borrowed. Everything else is symptomatic. It's your subjectivity which is the primary fucker. Yeah. There's no samsara here. Thankfully, there's no nirvana here. 86 on the nirvana. 86 on the samsara. Isn't this just itself? Capable of a cornucopia, cacophonous cornucopia of assignment and samsaric imposition, but not. You see, you don't really know your position, your coordinates, unless you assert. That's what we're playing with. That it's possible for anyone, big word, anyone except, of course, Eckhart Tolle, that this presents itself to you as wild intimacy. Wild, right? Crazy, undulating, evaporating, prescient, present, gone, absolute abandon. It can say anything it wants about itself and does, and we're the proof of that. But underneath all accusation and all assignment, all genesis, all source, all consequence, all space, all time, this is clear as a bell. And absolutely unadorned. That's awake. If you take a walk by a majestic pine tree and it speaks to you, that's a portal. Right? If you stub your toe, if you suck on mustard, everything, whether excitable or mundanely repetitive, is a portal into unmitigated intimacy. Nonstop. Even though nonstop suggests continuous, and this isn't really continuous. Though you can point the Hubble at a square inch and go, universe upon universe upon galaxy upon cluster. And you're like, fuck me, I had no idea. Right? This fucker shines. You are the shining. Your life will do pretty much as it pleases. If you want to fuss with your life, fantastic. Fuss on.
Or fuss off.
Sure. Fuss off. Fuss on. Fuss off. Fuss on. Fuss off. But Master Miyagi, fuss on. Fuss off. Who was the actor of the first Karate Kid? What was his name?
Macchio.
Ralph Macchio. Yeah. I don't like to name drop. Rastafarian. I was in a theater in Brooklyn with my partner, Sarah. whom I loved, and I regret my behavior.
You bring her up quite often.
I do?
She's the one that used to spend hours getting ready, and you would be like, oh.
No, that's three different women. The reflexologist was Lissy. Yeah, and that was Susan. I was talking about Sarah.
Sarah.
Get my girlfriend scene right, you fuckers. Of all the girls I've loved before, I regret my behavior. I'm just going to say that. There's no amount of apology. There's no amount of apology that I could offer these beautiful human beings that I had the privilege to meet that had the bad fortune to meet this. Oh, well. I was at a theater in Brooklyn, like with Sheepshead Bay. Yeah. Watching like a kind of an advanced showing of The Karate Kid when it first came out. Who was in the theater? Ralph fucking Macchio was in the theater. The star of the film. Cool. I gave Ralph a thumbs up as we left. I was like, that was a great fucking film, Ralph. He's like, hey, thanks. Got into a limo, took off. I got into a Volkswagen.
Do you think that's the first he saw it in full?
I doubt it, but who knows?
I don't know. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I don't know. There were not that many people in the theater. It wasn't like a gala event with a red carpet. I mean, there were 20 people, 30 people in the theater, but everyone was applauding. I mean, everyone really dug it. Cool. I don't know if maybe he could have been from there. You know, he could have been there with family or friends or something. But
surrounded by an entourage?
Not an entourage, you know. A couple of hoodlums. A couple of forget about it, guys. Forget about it. Hey, Ralph, you okay with this bozo? Forget about it. Yeah.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah. I got something like that.
Yeah, well, not Roger Ebert, but...
Oh, urinating next to Roger Ebert at the Nappy Convention. Oh, that was top. Yeah, really. Or hanging with Tony Danza.
I don't know about the Tony Danza.
Bam! Bloom! Boom! Boom! Uh-huh.
You're such a groupie.
I know, I'm so bad. Did you know like Michael Douglas is like about this tall?
Really?
Yeah, he's like...
That's because you elevated him in your mind.
Absolutely true. And Vanna, she's swell. Yeah, we hit it off.
Did these people go to like Buddhist things or something? Or?
No, I went to see them.
He goes out.
He's a groupie. He goes out hunting for them.
What would Tyler Durden do? What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, really? What do you guys talk about? I don't know, but it's the same thing each time. But what is it? I don't know, but it's always the same. Can you be more specific? Well, it's like noticing.
But not really.
Advanced noticing.
No.
Not just any noticing.
It's like resonant modes.
What is a resonant mode?
Resonant.
We'll have to get Peter on the phone.
It's what happens with bridges when they destruct because they're built poorly and like the waves. Mm. They're built to resonate with certain wave patterns, and they start to create the wave in the mechanical structure, and it completely blows them apart.
Oh, like that bridge.
Yeah, yeah. It resonates like...
It's when I was in a psychology kind of...
Mode.
Stratosphere, yeah.
Well,
I did my civil engineering implementation briefly.
She's a pro. It
comes from wave and
antenna
theory.
That's why before they cross the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so they don't all resonate across the bridge. Well, didn't Nikola Tesla say that he could split the world in half?
By stomping the right way?
By stomping, resonant stomping.
I tell you one thing, when I'm in a stadium, which has probably never happened, but I think it feels like it has, and everybody's stomping heavy. I'm like, ooh, I don't like this because I'm afraid that everything's going to cave in or something.
They're also drunk. They'd never get it well enough in sync to do any damage.
Let's tailgate. Let's go to like an Eagles game. We just hang out in the parking lot.
Stomp in unison.
We'll do vegan hot dogs and drink beer and.
Oh God.
Make sure to wear an Eagles jersey. Don't attract danger. Just make sure to wear the right jersey.
It always shocks me when I run into genuine sports fans. It's like,
how is it possible?
So strange.
It's hard.
I don't even speak sports.
You gotta just nip it in the bud, or try to dry out. And it's uncomfortable.
I like being
not unless you meet them with a what the fuck was that one? It was great. You're like standing in line, and some guy was like, "How about that Eagles game?" And you're like, "I don't know. How about the divine blah blah blah?"
Oh God.
Nature of your current infinite could radiant blah blah. And he was like,
"No, it was at the Was it the Warwick Farmers Market? Yeah, at the crepe van, the crepe truck. We were ordering crepes, and we were hanging out. Just like, yeah, how about the game and stuff? I was like, yeah, how about this? Is this the shit or what? I mean, whoa. He was like, step back.
You really send this to a guy? Like,
yeah.
Like somebody just said, how about the Eagles? And he was like, hey, how about like this divide?
He was sharing with me what he was interested in. I was sharing with him what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Well, last week or something at the Panera, I heard somebody ask you some stranger said, how are you? And you're like, I'm just trying to navigate the dream life.
I'm up the ass of reality. That's what I am.
Really?
No, I'm up the ass of selfing. That's what
really.
Fetterman says all the time.
Shiva's up my ass with a pneumatic drill. It's not going well. Oh!
They don't even take lunch breaks.
That's pretty good.
Been up the ass of selfing.
Too graphic for replay. Yeah.
She was something.
Good time for a mustard packet.
Oh, this is so divine, isn't it? It's pretty divine shit.
Psycho mayhem. Kiss kisse. Fa 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 fa.
Better. Run, 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 run away. I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out on the stage with bigger and bigger and bigger suits.
Mm-hmm.
He was so freaking cool. I loved him.
Well, he is freaking cool. Yeah. What else?
Huh.
Harinam, our guru in Vermont, who I'm not allowed to talk about. Harinam, the guru in Vermont. That's better. His style of interplay.
Is this dude still alive? This is the porch dude?
Yeah. Porch talk.
He's still alive?
I suspect that he is.
We should go there.
We could.
Can I just have an address and I'll just drive.
You would have a lot of fun.
You have a lot of fun.
No, hanging out with him on his porch.
Can I just do that?
He's like fucking heaven.
Oh wait, can I just do that?
No, no, he's the real deal.
Give me his address.
He's the real deal.
I'm like, I'm going to this by who we shouldn't talk about or something like that. Or we should say his name.
Well, he has a certain decorum, you know.
He doesn't want lunatics like me showing up on his porch.
No, if a lunatic gets through the cosmic defenses, they're welcome. There's no question about that. Yeah. But he shies away from, you know, the kind of over-commercialized notoriety that so many teachers make their living from. You know, he's not a hermit, but he's hermit-like.
Where in Vermont is he?
With Rock.
Yeah, what's the address? What's the address?
He's, I mean, being with him is really, really, really delicious.
My pants getting all excited.
But he's, you know, the way he plays with you, I mean, think of him as a Zen master with a very sharp sword. It's not until you've left the porch and driven back into town that you realize you have no head. That's how sharp the sword is. Yeah. You don't know that he's actually completely zipped your spine and esophagus and trachea until, like, you go to town and, you know, order some coffee and it strikes you that you forgot your head.
There's no mouth to put it in.
Right. Yeah, he's that good. But he, his ingress, right, is, let's call it, cracks in the driveway. He would not tolerate for a minute this fanciful, you know, exposition of cosmic gibberish. He would appreciate it at some level, but would not stand for it for an instant. And every time that, you know, we would kind of hang out with him and get a little lofty, you know, boom, he would just tamp it right down. So he likes the crack in the driveway approach. The crack in the driveway approach is, you must have a complaint. It's kind of like our dear friend Byron Katie that says, you know, you're complaining about everyone and everything. Why don't you write it down? We'll take it from there, right? So he knows that too, but he plays with it in a very different geometry, kind of a strangely adroit geometry, which is, rather than just showing up as some kind of lofty seeker wanting to talk shit about enlightenment, which he does not like, he lets you get away with it for a few minutes and then it's like, you go back to complaint. Now, to find a complaint in his presence is hard to do. That's why it's difficult.
You got to pull it out from your past.
Yeah, that's right. And he knows that, but in a way he kind of doesn't know it. Because here you are sitting in this high altitude, beautiful porch, staring across the green mountains of Vermont. And you can't find any complaint because he happens to be Krishna. And you're like, I would like to engage with you, Master, but I'm so happy I don't have a word to say. But still, he insists that you find a complaint so that he can cut your head off. And that's the way that rolls. So you make one up, you know, or sometimes you actually do have complaints, and he's incredible. He's just incredible at, you know, working the Play-Doh of consciousness to draw out the complaint and look at the consequences of the complaint, and see that the complaint, and this comes back to, you know, the samsara nirvana handshake, right? The TCIP connection between nirvana and samsara being exactly the same. So he's really good at taking the complaint and working it into a nirvanic insight, while still dealing with it at a call human and practical level. That's how good he is as he takes your head off.
Well, a complaint is no more than an interpretation, like a supposed interpretation of what it is.
A complaint is the yoga of radiant presence, right? The complaint is radiant irrefutability.
Isn't a complaint what comes from the mind?
No, because what's mind? Mind is radiant irrefutability. Yeah. Mind and all content is radiant irrefutability. It's absolutely nirvanic. That's what this is. But you can see how easy it is to particularize mind and complaint and then insist on a samsaric accusation.
Nothing wrong with kvetching. Nothing.
No. Kvetching is a high art.
That's cool. It kind of is back to the noticing thing.
Yes.
Because to say that there's some complaint there's like some noticer separate from.
That's right.
Complaint.
Here's an inclusivity that doesn't quit. How on earth did you figure out that this had a complaint? That becomes your complaint. By a miracle only. You couldn't have done it on your own, right? Mm-hmm. Magical powers. You had to rely on the magical power of this to turn a radiant irrefutability into a complaint. Mm-hmm. It goes back to what we were talking about when we started our heretical conversation, that when you're sitting on the cushion, you're trying to navigate or ameliorate content as if content is a problem, an obfuscation or an obscuration of your goal.
Now I'll have to look at my mother's radiant expression.
Watch what happens. Watch what happens when you do. Watch what happens when you do. Yeah. Yeah. Now we know that, you know, the resonant mode between parent and child can be sticky and painful and full of, you know, horrible emotivity. And it should be because their parents are insane. It's not never us. Yeah. And when you start to play around with, Paul Hederman likes to say entertain, right? Entertain that you're not that. Entertain that you're not the person, the symptoms, the basket of shit that you insist that you are. The unbearable lightness of being, right? Is an entertainment. And that entertainment is its own delight. Your nature is that of intimate inclusivity. So you're nothing but the miracle of entertaining. Entertaining what? Everything. Anything. And have no interest, as in, you know, durable accusation or durable complaint in anything, in everything. Because anything and everything just left the building like Elvis. And if you're still clinging to it, the unbearable lightness of being reveals to itself that anything and everything just left the building. Nonstop. And so how is it possible that you can invest in a condition as your condition, which needs to be ameliorated or medicated or improved upon? You can't. You can't. And yet the magical power to presume samsaric accusation is also curiously unabated. Now what are you going to do?
Thought occurred to me. Creativity comes from some strange perception of, I'm making this shit up, but anyhow.
You're not alone.
Some kind of lack, you know, and then you have a dream. And then you have this magnetism towards something, and then all of a sudden you're creating stuff, like a Tesla Roadster. Anyhow, it occurred to me my own creativity, my own creativity. Of course, I am that. Takes me to really wild places.
Sure, it does.
And it seems to start from some sort of wanted or longing. But I don't know.
It also just does itself. Yeah. Not as the consequence right. of desire or refusal. The Buddha made a big mistake. He made a lot, actually. Not that many people are willing to say it because, you know, the guy's, I mean, he's the fucking Buddha. You can't, no way he made a mistake. He made a lot of mistakes, bad mistakes. Asshole. Fucking Buddha. What a jerk.
He wanted to be understood by as many people as possible.
That's what he should have given up. Rather than attempting to be understood or to intervene, right, in everyone's samsara by coming up with the stuff that he came up with, he would have been better if he had taken some hot mustard, marijuana, pretzels, and beer, turned around and gone back into the woods.
Although, wouldn't you admit that there has to be some segue for
Paul Bart.
For this. Religion.
That's his name, Paul Black Blart. For Who's this? The guy that drives the Segway in those?
Paul Blart.
Paul Blart. Yeah. There is a Segway.
I'm
Paul Blart.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know who the driver is. He's local guy.
Kevin. Yeah, no, there's no Segway. Well, I mean, sorry. Unless you're Paul Blart is what I meant to say.
The stream of consciousness that comes out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And that has this laugh or be curious or... play
yeah.
or something.
And right.
There's some recognition there, and that recognition comes from somewhere. Because if there's no recognition, there's
right.
no connection or interest. I'm just throwing that out. And somehow it's there.
Yeah.
I'm not explaining why it's there, but I'm just, it's a curiosity that it's there.
Yeah, sure.
And
it's possible. Let's speak of irrefutability, which has no symptoms whatsoever, except all of this, as a piece of clay.
Except all of this.
You can turn it into anything you want, right? And so you can assign it at segues and resonances and possibilities. And why do I feel the way I feel? And why does a crazy person like me, you know, effuse this way when I should be institutionalized? Yeah, but see, this is just, it's just clay, right? You can see that it's clay. Your mind is Play-Doh. Your emotions are Play-Doh. Your body is Play-Doh. Everything is Play-Doh. It's just, this is claymation. It's a Frank Zappa film. Baby snakes. You're in a Frank Zappa movie. Baby snakes. Oh, I'm in a Frank Zappa movie. That's what this is. Yeah, Muggsy, where were you on the night of... Yeah, was that a Frank Zappa movie? Yeah, that's where I was.
Go into a long time.
Soon gonna be a dental floss tycoon. Brown shoes, don't make it. Quit school. Why fake it?
Talk about stream of consciousness going... Yeah. Who knows where, who knows what, who knows why.
I met Frank Zappa. I don't drop names, do I?
Never.
Never
was this
mind.
Also in a urinal again?
Or? No, it was at a bar. The Units were playing, Albany, New York. The Units, a very great band, The Units. Frank, I think, was probably had done a show at the Palace Theater or something that night in Albany and came to the bar to see The Units play.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I introduced myself. He was not impressed.
Is this a reoccurring theme?
Yes. Yes. You know, I graduated high school as Frank Zappa. It was a joke and a lark that disappointed my family terribly. Just another thing I regret. Like all the old girlfriends and everything else I've done. I absolutely sorry.
In the yearbook, does it say Frank Zappa?
No, it has my name. But my friend Arthur and I were kind of challenging each other to see who might, you know, pull a fast one. And so, of course, you know, they do – when you graduate, right, it's alphabetical.
Yep.
So my name is – I'm not going to say what it is for the sake of the Fred. Fred Blatsky. So there I was with the B's, Fred Blatsky. And the teacher that was announcing your name on the intercom – they didn't know who you were unless they knew who you were. But so you had to tell them your name, and then they would go, Fred Blatsky? So I walked up in my name order and said, Frank Zappa. You know? And he was like, he didn't quite know who Frank Zappa might be or not be. So I just said, Frank Zappa. Frank Zappa over the PA system at the graduation. Frank Zappa? Yeah, that's what I did. Yeah, and aunts, and I, nobody was proud of me that day. We got a roar. There was a roar. From the student body. They got it. Fucking asshole just graduated as Frank Zappa. It gets worse. Yeah, it gets worse. So there was a roar, and it was funny. I was excited. I was finally the fuck out of there. You know, I didn't care who I was. I could have been a 10,000-year-old, you know, woolly rhino. And I go back to my seat, and my hat fell off. You know, it was too big anyway. So it was falling off. I just took it and threw it gracefully up in the air. Not menacingly, not high, wouldn't harm anyone, just, you know, a little flip in the air and walked away. Friends, the football team, nobody liked me. Why would they? I smoke pot. They gave me my hat back, you know. Now, at the end of the ceremony, the football team took, and these hats are dangerous. I mean, this is sharp cardboard corners, yes, right? Sir. On a hat with, you know, it's a flimsy little thing with a... This sharp cardboard, I mean, you throw that at someone like a frisbee. It's like a martial art dart. Anyway, at the end of the ceremony, a lot of men, maybe no women, hard to say, took off their hats and threw them violently at the officiants on the stage.
Ooh.
They could have really hurt somebody. They did not throw it congenially up in the air and go, "Yay, I've graduated." No, these fuckers went, dozens of them.
That's pretty common, man.
Common, right?
That's pretty common. Now those kids are like throwing chairs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it. Anyway, the principal, Sullivan, John Sullivan, great guy. He pulled my diploma.
Ooh.
From the, he wanted to hold me responsible for my little antic that I had set Pandora's box open for violent mayhem to occur. I had to go meet with him personally, privately, to get my diploma after I got a good, you know, wrist slapping. I was going to say tongue lashing, but that wouldn't be appropriate in today's political climate. So I got a wrist slapping. Yeah. And I said, you know, "Dr. Sullivan, I do apologize. It was a spontaneous, harmless incident. And I don't think it's appropriate to hold me responsible for what turned out to be, you know, the violation of a bunch of Goombas on your fucking football team."
So did he say, "Mr. Zappa, you gotta learn"?
No, he knew. I think he knew who I was. Yeah, he knew who I was. Anyway, I'm so sorry I took up your time with that.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So when I met Frank Zappa at the bar when the units were playing, I said, "Frank, I'm Jeff. I graduated high school as you." He was like, "What is he going to do with that?" Great story, dumb fuck. You know, he was nice, but didn't go that far after that.
Yeah.
And then my friend Paul.
You didn't make it back to his place.
You can't score points. You can't score points with Frank Zappa.
Did you drink? I mean.
Yeah, unless you're Dweezil, maybe.
Jeez.
My friend Paul, who was kind of into martial arts, Frank had a bodyguard with him, an Afro-American gentleman of formidable stature.
Bought him a couple drinks.
And I remember Paul, you know, was like standing near the guy, and then he didn't say hi, "I'm Paul" or anything like that. He just did some kind of weird martial art thing. He went, "Oosh." "I guess let's get out of here." "Why did you do that?" "Oosh." Some kind of martial arts greeting, like a Masonic handshake. You know?
You guys should have got your ass kicked.
I know. I was like, "Don't do that. No, let's get out of here."
That's weird.
Everything, yeah, it's all weird.
God.
Yeah, Paul was a Vietnam veteran. The stories go on and on, you know, you just start free associating on every miraculous human being you've had the pleasure to meet.
That sounds like you've had some interesting times. I ran into David Morse at the Whole Foods and he grimaced when I recognized him.
David Morse?
Oh.
Yeah.
Time to go, right? just about.
Robin's like telling her celebrity stories.
Here we go. Let's just segue into celebrity stories.
Adam Sandler and was in line at CBS with the. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for joining us this evening. We'll see you the next time.
Wow.